The light that you shine can't be seen. Welcome to Tales for Wales, the pod that never fails to deliver that seal of approval, the pod that signs seals and delivers righteous there Welsh history, and whose favourite musician is probably Seal. Today's episode is Seal-based. that's as much as
yeah,
I know.
If you hadn't guessed, it's Seal-based. That's good, mate. Yeah, it was the same old tones hit once, twice, thrice, but it worked.
Yeah, well, I was trying to think how many puns could I have on Seal, but like, I mean, there's not many. So,
you know what? Let's just say Seal three times and then we'll call it a day. Yeah. Fair play.
Oh, how are you, mate? It's just me and you, first time in a while.
It's just me. It feels like a couple of fellas on a bloody podcast. It does feel like it's the first time we've done this, just me and you, for a little while. It hasn't been that long, because we did it when I was up north, you know, when I was up north.
No, but I wasn't drinking then.
That's why it doesn't feel like it is, right. Because it never felt the same when you were doing dry jam.
It was
massively inferior. We were dishing an inferior product in jam. Yeah.
It doesn't work
it doesn't work when only one half of us is absolutely leaded on the podcast. So.
Normally, when we like finish the pod, we stay up chatting for hours, just yapping on. But when one of us was sober, it's like, right, I'm off. I cannot handle this.
This is too much. One of us is going, slurring about words. What do you reckon we should do, get a podcast next level? And you go, look, I'm just going to knock it on the head, mate.
I'm going to go kill myself.
I've had my third Heine Zero. Yeah. I'm off.
I'm bloated. I'm gassy.
Actually, drinking when you're not getting drunk is actually quite uncomfortable. I'm off.
It is mental. You just say, like, you have like four like pints of water or whatever. You're like, oh god, I'm drowned from the inside.
Like, what is interesting is like, Britain has such like a unique booze culture. We went into this shout out to the Alcohol in Wales episode. If you want to go listen to that, we have our own like distinctive like boozing culture, binge drinking culture. But basically. My wife's sister's husband. Is that my brother-in-law? Yeah.
Yeah.
Your brother-in-law. Right.
Yeah.
My wife's sister would be my sister-in-law. It'd be my wife's sister's my sister-in-law, and then he just becomes my brother-in-law because he's the husband, right? That's fine.
Yeah.
Familial maths, who knows? But anyway, you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, I get it.
Anyway,
I get it.
He's Lebanese, right? And he can drink with the best of him, he can drink like a fish, right? But he'll only have like 2-3 pints tops, right, when he's over here, and then he switches to whiskey and he'll just go straight whiskey for the rest of the night. You'll drink that all night,
yeah,
and he'll stay up till the early hours when you're doing that. But like, if I'm on a proper sesh, I'm talking like 10 pints.
Yeah,
like,
10 pints.
And then maybe like move on to the rums. Yeah. But he was like, it's so much volume. He was like, how do you keep it in? It's so much volume. He said, and all you guys do is just go back and forth to the toilet afterwards. And I was like, he's not wrong. He has actually got a point. We go to the toilet a lot.
We had like 5 pints last night, didn't we? Yeah. At the pub, and went for a meal. And like, 5 pints is relatively quite a bit, but that was like nothing. It was just like, just, you don't really notice it.
I think I had a wee once, I think.
Yeah,
our bladders are just like supercharged. They can hold so much water, big old bouquets. Now we're talking about it.
Should we, because I put this on pause whilst we had guests on for the last couple of weeks, but we did threaten to discuss something cultural. Cultural. I've got a fucking big fat throat. Cultural.
Cultural. It's cultural
review
actually.
To give ya. Listen to my cultural review. We wanted to watch Kneecap, or I suggested people watching Kneecap, didn't I? So, as a little synopsis, it's like an Irish film about the Irish language by two naughty lads who, like, in Scotland, you'd call them, like, they're called Neds. There's, like, there's a film called NEDS, and it means non-educated delinquents, which is like a really, it's like how, you know, chav is really offensive as well. It means council house and violence. It's quite a snobby middle class way of just saying, you know, lightly lads.
Lumping like sort of what you would, I'm saying what you would consider uneducated people.
Yeah, it's Daily Mail talk, isn't it? It's just like all the Daily Mail talk.
Yeah, it's not something like me and you would necessarily use. I've used scallies. The word chav. I call them scumbags.
I call them ruffians.
But I'd also quite happily have a pint with them.
That's the difference. We do. Also, all of your family would be excluded.
I was just about to say, me and you are from such backgrounds, and we've had pints with each other. So fine,
Fine. So they're like two like scally like Irish lads growing up in Northern Ireland who are rappers, but they speak in Irish or Gaelic. And once they get arrested, so at the very start of it, one of them gets arrested, and he requests an Irish translator. So the police hire in this guy, and he gets really good, and it focuses on like how in Northern Ireland, Irish isn't legally equal to English language as it is, you know, in Wales and Scotland, where the Welsh language is legally equal to English. So I could say,
why we've got it on the road signs and all that sort of stuff. And like, I mean, I work in public sector, so like, we've got to do, there's not just, you have to do everything in Welsh and English. There's like certain levels that you have to adhere to, so you cannot have Welsh less favorable,
treated
less favorably than English and stuff like and that. It's so it's like, you know, like it's parity protest. In the law, doesn't it? Which is something important.
And it's something Welsh protesters and people have fought like so hard to get.
Off decades for,
For decades. And Scotland is similar, although Scottish isn't as popular in Scotland as Welsh is in Wales. So I don't think it's like on everything in the same measure.
Maybe not as much on the radar, I guess.
But in Northern Ireland, it's not even a legal requirement, or it's not legally equal to. So it's inferior to English in terms of legal status, which sounds harsh, but that's just the reality. So they put English above the Irish language in Northern Ireland. And it's them kind of discussing that. And it's a fictional film, but based on their true life story. And like, so it's like, you know, it's their story, but like made
dramatized
into
a little bit.
And it's fantastic. It's such a good watch. And
it was brilliant. Absolutely.
They're like,
brilliant.
They're funny. And it's like, you'd probably call it a foreign language film in here because it's subtitled. But it's also mixed with English.
It's got bits of English in it, isn't it? Yeah. But it is, you couldn't watch it without subtitles. No. Well, unless you were fluent Gaelic, I guess.
But they're like, in real life, they're a massive rap group. They're like really popular. They're like, they've gone on to do amazing things. But I think they do something that's really cool and interesting, is that they use the language as like a form of resistance. And I think they say something that like every Irish word spoken is a bullet of resistance. And because they have that really recent, like violent past, that feels more prominent. Like, you know, Wales, we had a violent past 400 years ago. So it's slightly different. But I do think if they could like tailor the Welsh language to be a tool of resistance, I think it would make the language thrive so much more. Like make it the language as like a weapon against centuries of colonialism. Mm. And there are some Welsh rappers like Sage Todd and people like that who do use the language whilst they rap. But like, I just think the Welsh language could learn so much from this.
I know what you mean. If we could frame it in the same way, because like fucking how... like keen are we to like start a fucking rebellion type thing, but we don't have the minerals to do a physical one, nor the time or energy. But if someone told us, if you just speak Welsh that's like a bullet of resistance. I'm like, let's go.
But when we were
it,
in school, they were like, oh, speak this or you're in trouble. Like they'd force it. Like if you don't speak Welsh, you are literally being punished at lunchtime, and you have to stay in for detention because you were caught speaking English.
Yeah, we've like, touched on that before. The way they do it in my opinion, I mean, God, I don't know if they do it right now, you know, people in school, I've been out of school for a long time, but like the way they used to do it with us.
You said that like you're
backwards.
Boasting.
I've been out of school a long time. I actually got my GCSEs quite a while ago. but the way they used to do it with us was, it actually achieved the opposite effect in that when I was a kid in school, I thought Welsh was a bit lame because I was like, I constantly get fucking the thing is you get like the diehard teachers in school where you'd be quoting a film. If they caught you quoting a film, you were done for speaking English. You got to go to detention and stuff like that. And it's like, fuck off. Like, you know, I'm allowed to talk. Yeah, I'm allowed to talk Welsh and then like include a film quote or even include a bit of Way English if I want.
We weren't doing that. I mean, a lot of time I was just speaking English. But we grew up in like Barry, South Wales. Like, it's not a Welsh-speaking area. It's the first Welsh language school in Vale of Glamorgan. Of course, we're not going to be as like fluent. So like, ease up. Don't make people hate the language or resent
it. It's not like in North, up North, is it, where people genuinely, they speak Welsh in their homes and like where they're brought up speaking Welsh first.
It's more natural
English
in
second.
School to speak it with your friends and stuff. So I just always think the way the teacher here is just so backwards, and I do think, like, in general, Welsh is becoming a bit more cool anyway, and the people are massively more invested in Welsh culture. Like, take this podcast,
I genuinely believe it's on the rise.
Well, like, us two idiots who have no credentials have got like a successful podcast of like people listening, like, it's mad, and it's only because people like Welsh history. Like, we're not the ones doing anything. It's the content that's kind of getting listeners in, and that's like,
oh, I don't know, mate. I say we have a little bit of charm ourselves.
But do you know what I mean? Like, we if me and you did a podcast about films, no one would listen to it because who cares? But we do a podcast about Welsh history.
Thank
and
God
it gets
you
popular.
Dissuaded me of that when we were brainstorming ideas as well.
But do you know?
Basically,
what I mean?
We've talked about this before, but when we were coming up with ideas, all mine were film based. And Frank said, look, those are a fucking dime a dozen.
But I think
this
is like,
someone with a little bit of a USP.
You know, if there's a parallel universe, if me and you started with the same resources and we did a film, a podcast about films, we'd get nowhere and no one would really care about it. We do this and we, like, you know, we get like thousands of downloads, and it's because of the content we're choosing. People care about Wales and want to learn about it. And I do think, I was watching the film Kneecap and thinking, I wish I could do this in Welsh, but I
know what you mean.
I don't think we.
No, Wales and Welsh is an untapped resource. That's what we seem to clue in on. And
let's monetize it. Get on the Patreon
now. Now I need to fucking bend it over the capitalism barrel and take it for a fucking ride. But it's. But no, it is. When I was thinking the exact same thing, because you told me to watch Kneecap, and you were like, "Please, please, please, watch it."
Yeah. So what
and
are your
I watched
thoughts
it on
it,
the long old. I watched on a long old train back from Wrexham, from Bangor, actually, the other week.
Heard
so that's like a 4.5 hour very good. That's a 4.5 hour train or something like that. So I was like, right, I've queued up a few films. I primed myself with, A Touch of Cloth season two. First, very funny. Anyone who's not seen that, go watch it. Hilarious. Yeah. Nothing to do with what we're talking about now, but that's just a recommendation from me. But then, chucked on Kneecap with a couple of drinks. Oh my God, I was so into it.
Yeah.
It's got, you probably wouldn't recognize anyone in it apart from Michael Fassbender.
Yeah.
Who is like sort of, he's not in it for a huge chunk of the runtime, but he plays like a pivotal part. I think he plays one of the dads, doesn't he?
I actually can't really remember.
One of the dads of the kids.
Oh yeah, but, he does, doesn't he? Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, one of the dads of the guys who's in the main guys who's in Kneecap.
He was an old IRA person, wasn't he? So like they grow great parallels between like the IRA and modern day resistance.
Yeah,
stuff,
I think what I loved about it is it also showed like the old school kind of attitude toward the language, like you said, where there's like every word spoken in Gaelic is a bullet against the English or something.
Yeah, or bullet resistance. Something like that. Something like that. Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think we've both misquoted it about four times already. But the actual quote on the film is very profound and very good, actually. So go watch it to hear the real one. But it's it's really good to show like the generational difference, because there's like the and this isn't spoilers because it happens really early in it, but you find like the one of the main guys who's like, you know, diehard Irish and all that sort of stuff, he's shagging a girl who's like, she
a Protestant or like, no, a non. So in Northern Ireland, you have
she
those
was born
are
there, you know, she was born there rather than like sort of has generations of like the Irish heritage and stuff like that.
But
I
think
carrying
it's
that with her.
You know, she's a unionist and they're Republicans, so she wants to carry on being part of the United Kingdom, and they're Republicans.
So like her family moved there, and she thinks it's great that we're all part of this United Kingdom and whatever.
But we say her family, it's probably like a generation, you know.
Yeah, so it's a generational thing. But anyway, and it's interesting to see like I really like that it isn't so fucking black and white, and like the way a culture and a language has to evolve to survive. And they touch on that at the end. I'm not going to spoil anything, like what the sort of epiphany is. But it was really good. And it was so much. I just relate so much to what you said when you were like, I want someone to make a film almost exactly like that. You could do it scene for scene if you wanted,
but Welsh.
But just make it Welsh, yeah.
Yeah. I know we don't share the same...
Welsh? Penellyn? Penglyn?
Penglyn. Penglyn. I know they don't... I know in... Like, we don't have the same violent history or recent violent history. And I think they're called, like, the peaceful generation. There's a name for their generation, for the teenagers who grew up during the when the IRA gave up their guns in, you know, the end of the 90s. Those who were born then, they're called, they got a name, like peaceful, something about their generation not being involved in the IRA.
They feel
a bit lost. They're like, well, what's our form of resistance? Because they haven't got one.
Yeah, they do touch on that, don't they? They say, like, what have we got then? Because you're like, you're the sons of the people who fought, and then.
But we don't have that, like, violent recent history, which is, you know, it's a good thing. Like, we can't glorify it. It looks fucking, it was terrifying. It destroyed the communities, and it's still, you know, it's scarily getting a bit closer to being back like that again now with Republicans and unionists. Like, you know, having a football tit for tat. But I just think there's things we could, like, do to make the language cooler. And like, and Northern Irish, I think at the end of the film they mention, this isn't a spoiler at all, but the language, no, I won't say that. I won't say. You watch the film, you'll see that, like,
you might touch on this again in a couple of weeks or something, when you've all had a chance. It's a really good film. It's generally worth a watch. And it's on Prime, isn't it?
Yeah, it's on Prime. The saying is, every word of Irish spoken is a bullet fired for Irish freedom. And that's the...
There we go. Every time we said it, we got it wrong, but there you go. You got the right one now.
Yeah. But let us know what you think. It's like, as a, you know, me and Jack are Welsh speakers, but it's not our first language. We grew up in an area where there wasn't barely any Welsh because of, you know, political reasons why there wasn't any Welsh in South Wales for a long time.
It's interesting. I keep saying this, right? So my wife is like sort of thinking of picking up Welsh again. She's tried sort of on and off for years to speak Welsh. She always tells me that I've got two first languages because I went to Welsh nursery, for example. I always say that my first language is English because I didn't use speak Welsh at home.
Yeah.
That's what I consider sort of first language Welsh, but I can totally see why other people, I think like the Doc Cymraeg, when he was on, he was like, he would consider us first language Welsh. Since we were like children.
Yeah. We said it before, like, my people who went to our schools, so they did primary, secondary, and left to go to Barry College at sixth form, go to college. And my mum was working there, and they'd say, when they were filling out their form saying, how good are you at Welsh, they wouldn't put fluent. They'd put, like, say if you score out of five, they'd put, like, two. But they literally just math, science.
They'd definitely be, like,
they're a five.
They'd be solid five, yeah.
Yeah, like, you can understand everything. It's just like, you might not be able to get every single mutation, but you're still fluent. Like, and I just think the way we frame Welsh language,
no one's
going
to ask you
really
to bloody write an essay in Welsh and expect you to get it on. But yeah,
if you had someone who, if I said, someone who wasn't massively academic, who'd lived in England all their life, and they wrote an essay and it was full of spelling errors and, you know, a bit messy.
Grammatical,
you wouldn't say,
you
can only speak Welsh English two out of five. Like, they're still fluent.
English isn't your first language.
Like, I'm so bad. I'm so dyslexic. I'm so bad at spelling. I'm awful. If we do it like on that stuff, I can't speak Welsh or English. So
I say, you're going to get shit in any language. So
I don't know. I just wanted to talk about it on the pod and think it'd be good to frame it. And like, everyone who listens, and every time you engage with us on stuff, you always say really interesting stuff. So I kind of wanted to branch this out to hear from you lot what you think.
Let's see. Everyone get in touch and see. You've seen Kneecap, let us know what you thought. If you haven't, then go watch it and then tell us what you thought. Give us a synopsis of what you do for the Welsh version. I'm happy doing the exact same thing, like I said, with the just put Welsh people in it instead.
Well, we had a message from a dude called Joseph who listens. I think what country does he listen in? He said Stockholm. So he listens in Stockholm, and
said, we just topped the charts in Sweden, by the way. Just that's a side bit for us, but I share it with the gang. Why not? Yeah. We're big in Sweden, okay? Big in Sweden and Czech Republic recently.
Sweet. So maybe Joseph, there's some more Welsh expats with you. He said a humble request from a late learner of Welsh, born and raised in Newport, unfortunately the most anglicized part of our fair land, which what we were just saying. I would love it if you boys dropped in a few more Welsh words and phrases so I can learn while I'm having a giggle, particularly Welsh slang and swear words. There's a bit of a dearth of resources out there when it comes to that. I'm always told that Welsh is such a polite language, but I'm sure there's a few gems up your sleeves. So that's a bit of a call out as well. Kerry Gravy.
Joseph, said.
Yeah, Joseph.
But, Joseph. Yeah. Go on. You carry on with Kerry Gravy. I got an absolute gold star. Disgusting Welsh phrase after that.
Kerry Gravy is like, it means go scratch, but it like it's the equivalent of fuck off, Kerry Gravy. Go on, Kerry Gravy. Like, I love Ker.
Get the fuck out of here. Like,
I'll say Ker. Because Ker's like, clear off, get out of it. So Kerry Gravy. What's your one?
I got two, right? So I've talked about one on this pod before, which is Cachy Babby's Plastic, which is disgusting. Shitting plastic babies, right? So if you had a bit too much curry the night before, your khaki babby's plastic. But when I remembered it, I was thinking about khaki babby's plastic for some reason, and it came in. There used to be this resource online called the Freigiadur.
Oh, yeah.
And it was basically, it's
so Freigi is Welsh for swearing.
Yes. So dictionary in Welsh is geiriadur, right? Yeah. And Freggy is swearing, so they sort of called the Freigiadur, and it was like self-submitted, so like public submitted. It doesn't matter if you're north, south, west, whatever. You'd submit your own swear words and like your colloquial swear words, and it was such a laugh to go through that as like a Welsh speaker, because they come up with some fucking inventive stuff. And one of them was Boito Sarnai Jam. Which is eating jam sandwiches, eating a jam sandwich. And it was, we might cut this, I don't know, up to you. But it's if you go down on a girl while she's on.
Oh, Jesus, you're a pig.
Eating a jam sandwich.
We'll keep it in, because Joseph,
I don't know if that's what you're after, mate, but if that only dispels the myth that Welsh is the tone
of the pod.
Yes, I know. I thought that when I was saying it, I was thinking it in my head.
That's fine.
So, Joseph, if that only dispels the myth that Welsh is a polite language, mate, you know, we're just as filthy as the rest of them, don't worry.
Yeah. Oh, mate, we've been talking for 20 minutes. Should we crack on with today's ep?
Yeah, no problem. Let's get on with
it. So weird.
I know. I can't, again, can't do a transition. Can talk about jam sandwiches. Yeah. Can get talk about jam sandwiches in Welsh, but I can't easily. I'm like on something off the Indatables.
Yeah, I know. That's what I was trying to do then. I'm trying to think of the code. Oh,
is that what you were doing? Yeah. I love a little Ming pin or a Bichon Frise.
You're like that guy. Right. We've both got autism then. You were that
Hello,
kid.
Alice. Yeah. Tell me this. Would you like to go on another date with me?
That's you on trying to do.
Are we just making fun of autistic people now?
No, man, that show is so brilliant. That and Love is Blind are so heartwarmingly lush. It's not making fun. Autism is quite a funny thing. I got family members who are autistic.
It can't be making fun if it's funny. All right?
No, I'm not 100% not making fun of people with autism, but autism in general is quite a funny thing. Like, it's
to be fair, when they get like a really good date and they're buzzing about it, it does warm the old cockles up, doesn't it? You're like,
general, like I got uncles who are autistic, and like they'll just say things in the reason it's funny is because they'll say things that aren't socially normal, hence why it's funny. It's like, oh, you can't say that, but it makes it funny. And like I've never shied away from thinking that it's enjoyable, and obviously it's that there's social issues with it, but if you're a bit more relaxed and don't worry too much about social stuff, you can just it's a laugh, it's fun that people are different.
I could say stuff like she's in fucking Kent as well if I wanted.
Certainly is a lot. I think people get so uptight a bit against some things, and it's like, it's fine, chill out. Don't know why we've got on this.
Well, there's a PSA, guys, right? And we're 25 minutes in, right? Yeah. I'll try and breeze through this quick as I can now to make up. So, anyway, you've seen the fucking title. Operation Seal Bay is what we're talking about today. The genesis of this operation. Let me start again.
It's so funny you've gone all official after.
I know. It's right. Everyone shut up now.
Yeah, it's like you're on the fucking Channel 4 news. Like,
now, it's like the on-air light has gone on. Yeah. It's like, right, serious time now.
Up until this, we do that swear word. You know, the lady who was counting down from the news and then got caught swearing?
Yeah. Don't say fuck or bugger, And so I'll start again now. I'm going official, right? So this is about Operation Seal Bay. It took place in 1983. The genesis of this operation all began in our most favourite of places, the pub, of course, namely the Dinner's Cross in Newport, Pembrokeshire. Not to be confused with the city of Newport in Gwent. This is another Newport down on the southwest coast of Wales. That's where, if you listen to our Knapan episode, this is where the last ever game of Knapan was played. The modern version of Knapan was, well, I don't know if it was played there, but that was one of the teams anyway, Newport, Pembrokeshire. So, one night in the Dinner's Cross, side note, what would you call that if it was your local? If you, if your local was the Dinner's Cross, would you be like, let's go down for the Dinner's for a few? Or would you say, few down the cross?
The cross sounds too religious and English.
I was like, oh, down the... Yeah, I think you're right, actually. You would say, oh, the Dinner's, wouldn't you? Dinner's.
Depends where you are. Sorry. I'd probably say the Dinner's. Obviously, you say Dinner's Powis, but I think anywhere else you'd say Dinner's.
Dinas, yeah, let's go down to the Dinas for a couple. Yeah, all right, stick to our Welsh roots. Sorry, that's neither here nor there.
Yeah.
I'm coming back. Anyway, at that pub one night, a lady named Sue Warner and her family, all locals, by the way, were having a few bevs in the pub when they noticed a group of men spending a lot of money and getting quite rowdy. They even noticed that these boys kept paying for pints with £50 notes, every time £50 notes, and getting change. Now, I can only imagine...
What era? What year?
In 1983.
Jesus, that's going to be a...
They must be getting
wedge.
A lot of change. Yeah. Heavy, jangling pockets. And then you're just showing off. Just showing off. So anyway, they were doing this, paying with 50 notes a lot of the time. And they also, the residents, it's not the residents, the punters, they noticed that they pulled up earlier in the day in a couple of very flashy cars, like way too flashy to be like, you know, your local regulars.
Yeah.
This piqued people's interest, of course, but who knows? They could have just been like a couple of bloody city boys, you know? Who knows? Sue's dad, though, he was an avid wild camper, and he was camping on a clifftop at one point and noticed some men sleeping rough one night on the beach below the cliff. He noticed some men sleeping rough one night on the...
I thought you tutted because you heard me fart.
Hey, now what 2.5 years come in on. It starts bothering me.
The farty co-host.
The farty co-host. Oh god, we'd have made it by now if for the bloody farts on the other end. Sorry, no. So basically, Sue's dad camping on a clifftop noticed a few boys on the beach below, and he thought that was a bit odd. Like, why would they be camping on the beach, right?
Yeah.
Not long after, some lobster fishermen, they spotted some dodgy activity along the beach, and they confronted the men involved. The men assured them that they were training for an expedition to Greenland to film whales and seals, but the fishermen called absolute like bullshit on that.
Yeah.
And they reported them to the police, assuming they just assumed that they were like poachers. So like they could have been cockle poachers or like trying to nick their
catch.
Their catch.
Yeah.
Anyway, over the weeks, Dyfed Powys Police, they took 540 different statements from local residents, all detailing different suspicious activity, including a large bale of cannabis resin washing up on the local beach. Before long, the police were searching the bay, and one day, with a local farmer who knew the area, they came across a coastal cave. The farmer, at one point, he threw a stone into the cave. I couldn't find out why. He just decided to lob a stone in there, right? But he did. And to all their surprise, the stone hit something metal and hollow. So it made like a real like bing, ding. Like a real ding.
Yeah,
a ding. When they looked in the cave then, they investigated further, they found someone had cleared out sand and rocks and built an underground bunker, complete with a metal hatch for getting in and out.
Shit.
The bunker was held up by timber and lined with fiberglass resin. Obviously, this is the 80s, not too safety conscious of those fucking boys back then. But anyway, in the bunker, the police found £80,000 worth of equipment, including powerful outboard motorboat engines, large inflatable ribs, and building equipment.
Ribs?
Yeah, I think they're like, you know, like the little noodles you can put into yourself? And a thing. I think it's like the proper version of them, like what you consider professional standards. So they initially, if someone knows better than me on that, by all means, comment. They initially thought it might have been something to do with gun running for the IRA, funny enough. Ooh. So actually quite linked to what we were talking about earlier. So he thought it might be linked to gunrunning for the IRA before the team started to connect all the dots of all these strange sightings and reports that had been going on in recent months. So this is where Operation Seal Bay was born, headed up by Detective Chief Inspector Don Evans and Detective Superintendent Derek Davis, a.k.a. the Don and Dee Dee, a.k.a. Triple D. So that's not official lines, by the way. I've just made that up for fun. So after cross-referencing the hundreds of reports, they determined the boys on the piss that night at the Dinis Cross were a couple of blokes named Robin Boswell from London and a Danish actor called Søren Berg Arnbach, who had been on the run for 11 years for drug offences in Europe. Ooh. And also went by the nickname Rubberface because he was a master of disguise, apparently. Because he was an actor, I think they just thought, oh, God, he's invisible, he's a comedian.
He wears so many faces.
How can we tell the difference between him when he acts like such a Welshman, you know?
Yeah.
And so Søren, he was a multimillionaire and had a luxury yacht as well as villas in Italy and Switzerland. He'd been living under the alias Sam Spangard while he was living in Wales. So that's why no one could caught him to this point. Police caught Boswell, the guy from London, after a stranger matching his description was spotted by two young boys and their mammy. And then Boswell proceeded to dick the police around by giving them a total of 17 false names and addresses for them to check out. No, promise, bro. I'm telling you the truth now, bro. My name's Bobby Bobkins. I live at fucking 123 Bobby Street. Serious this time, bro. Honest. And they're like, all right, mate, listen now. But I'm going to be fuming if you've messed me about for the 17th time. So, like, you basically just gave fake names and addresses 17 times while they went, listen, cut the bullshit. But the first 17 times, I'm thinking, why did they go ahead? This must be true.
Yeah, fool me once, shame on you.
Fool me 17 times.
Yeah, then we're
shame
not
on my entire fucking department. Yeah. Luckily, David Powers police, they had his boots tested when he was arrested. And it was chocked full of fiberglass resin. So evidentially linked him to the bunker that they'd found. Yeah. So that was like after the fucking 17 absolute blips on or non-results on their checks, they got something. They got a bit of headway. The day after Boswell was arrested, they picked up Søren Berg Arnbach, or Rubberface himself, after he was spotted by police officers on patrol near Fishguard. Must have been one of those days that the so-called fucking master of disguise didn't put any effort into it. I'm only popping out for a paper and some ciggies. What are the odds? I've been on the lam 11 years. No one can catch a rubber face. And, well, the police did fucking spot him. And just to confirm their suspicions, when they were spotted, they called out his name and he fucking panicked, lobbed his rucksack off and legged it across a nearby field and then just jumped. He jumped over a hedge and then there was a barbed wire fence in front of it and he just vaulted straight over it.
Oh.
Unbeknownst to Søren, the particular fence he jumped over was surrounding a 70-foot quarry and was there to stop people fucking falling into it. So I love the idea of him like saddled like Jack Sparrow style. This is the day you'll always remember the day as the day you almost caught Rubberface, the master of disguise. And well, he jumps over this fence.
Do you remember there's a film called Master of Disguise but by Dana Carvey? You know, the guy from Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, no, you were from bloody Wayne's World.
Wayne's World, yeah. Sorry, Wayne's World. Whenever you keep saying Master of Disguise, I keep thinking of that, which is one of the worst films. Like, it's so bad. And whilst they're filming it, 9/11 happened whilst they're in New York.
Oh, wow.
And they make like a really odd reference to it on there. Can I just read a quick thing from there? They went, they were meant to be releasing it, but they were like they stopped it. But in the film, there's like loads of references to 9/11 and
how great the Twin Towers are.
But it happened on the day, and they had a moment of silence, then carried on filming. But he was dressed in this massive turtle outfit during the moment of silence. And there's like a video. So back to our own master beyond disguise.
Well, exactly. But I just love that idea that he was like, "See you, suckers!" Jumped over a fence and he fucking fell into this quarry. He only survived the 70-foot fall because on his way down, he grabbed onto a protruding tree root. Obviously, it must have had some fucking like vice-like grip, because it managed to slow him down enough not to kill him, but just to completely immobilize him when he hit the ground. Basically, the police then took the time to get to like walk down to the quarry and find his fucking like dropped corpse. Well, not corpse, he wasn't dead. His dropped body at the bottom of the quarry. Police seized his rucksack, right? And the only thing they found in it was a high-powered radio. So, acting on a hunch, the Don and Dee Dee, the fucking lead investigators, they decided to set up the radio on the cliff overlooking the bay where they found the bunker and play the waiting game. After a few hours, the radio picked up a signal and the words, "Mother, mother, I want to come in and get the dirt off my hands," were heard. The message was, I know, it's for dirt, isn't it? Yeah. The message was from a smuggling vessel just outside the off the coast, which the police promptly seized, or at least in some iterations, they say they seized it. Some of the sources I read, they said that it was just, they used that as proof as a wider operation. In any case, Operation Seal Bay, mother, mother, I want to come in and get the dirt off my hands.
That's so weird.
Yeah, it basically, I think it just meant like they wanted to offload the drugs, like I said, but it's like, what a weird code word. You could think of something cooler than that, sure.
Yeah, I know. It just sounds, if I hear that my next door neighbor, I'd think, well, they're either like sex freaks or there's something really sinister going on. I think, yeah, that's an odd choice of a knocking in. Also, when would you be saying that out loud? Like, you just go to your mum's house if you wanted to wash your hands.
And like, if you're going to do an international drug ring, like, you want to think of something cool, you know, like eagle wants to land.
Yeah, I was going
to
say the sparrows left the nest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Amy's just distracted me. She came in. She's got this new bloody, like, face mask thing. That's, like,
terrifying.
Shone's light into her into her face.
Yeah.
She looks like a fucking, like Jason Voorhees or something. It's freaky as fuck.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Back to Seal Bay. So, yeah, they seized this boat, apparently, in some sources. Others just says that it was like proof of a wider conspiracy. In any case, Seal Bay continued to follow the money, and eventually they uncovered a global trafficking operation that spread from Newport, Pembrokeshire, to London, France, Spain, and Scandinavia. Ooh. A detective sergeant, John Daniels, said at the time, it was a coup for the smallest police force in the country to take on the biggest drugs gang at the time. So it was just David Powers police, like, fucking tracking this like international drug ring down.
I mean, they did get the wrong person 17 times. They got fooled by the same trick.
Listen, you're going to be honest with me now?
Come on now, boys. Be honest now. Come on now.
Yeah, serious now. You're not going to take me around for bloody the 17th time.
No, I do know your mother around here. Please don't take me around anymore.
Yeah. So the task force followed one stream of money from Boswell, the guy from London, to the Isle of Man, where it was recorded that Boswell had visited the bank in 1982, carrying two suitcases full of cash, coming to a total value of £757,000. When the police quizzed the bank manager in the Isle of Man why he didn't alert anyone, like, is this not unusual type thing, you know, two suitcases full of, like, almost a million quid. he said, it's not unusual for people to come in carrying shopping bags with 50 grand in notes in them. So for those who don't know, Isle of Man is a tax haven. So probably has fucking tons of dodgy money coming in and out of it. So this guy just didn't even fucking question
Blink,
it. David Powers police also seized their cars, which were worth £100,000, including a Ferrari, a Range Rover,
and this
and
is
Rolls
only the
Royce.
80s, so the inflation on that.
On the 80s, yes. If you think about the inflation, just imagine it. I didn't look that up for you, so you have to imagine it. Being Armbach, Rubberface himself, he was sentenced to 8 years in prison, whereas Boswell, the Londoner, he got 10 because he was said to be the mastermind behind the whole thing.
He was the master of disguise, the Dana Carvey of
exactly, the Turtle Man himself. So he got slapped with a harsher sentence. I reckon maybe they felt sorry for Rubberface because he was such a dumb bitch fucking jumping that fence and just like launching himself into a fucking quarry. And I'm like, see you suckers.
See you suckers.
Fuck. Yeah. And I just love the thing of, I am the master of disguise. I just didn't disguise myself that day. They went, hey, are you Rubberface? Yeah, launch his fucking thing. See ya. Fucking idiot. Anyway, six other gang members were also arrested and jailed in connection to the drug ring. the trial judge commended the police and the people of Newport, Pembrokeshire, for bringing the gang to justice, and keeping a keen eye out for unusual goings-on was praised by the prosecution, who said, quote, "These greedy schemes were brought to light because of the neighbourliness or nosiness of local people, the interest and curiosity shown by decent people." So yeah, being a bloody busybody can have its perks if there's a drug ring going on in your area. So just bear that in mind. But that is the story of Operation Seal Bay. Seal Bay, baby.
Oh, I like it. Well, we've done quite a long older epi for... We've got two episodes tonight, which are both a bit more lighthearted, aren't they? But we still managed to take this to 40 minutes. I was also going to say, did we explain enough about Kneecap, about what the premise is? Because there's a teacher involved, which is like a really integral part. Kind of glossed over the fact, but
I mean, I think we did a whistle stop tour of it, really.
It wasn't really to review the film. I wanted to just, I was more wanted
thank God
to
for
chat
that
about...
because we didn't do that.
Good, because that's not what happened. But yeah, I was just thinking I was thinking, well, we didn't really explain the film, but the whole point is it'd be great if people watch it and then discuss like just the impact in Wales on it, because I think that'd be really cool. And I genuinely would like to hear from people about what they think.
Yeah. I went in not knowing anything about the film and I thoroughly enjoyed it. So yeah, go in, even with our like slapdash brief. Brief on it and enjoy it and then come back and tell us how much you enjoyed it. That sounds good to me.
All right, Jill and Grandel, guys, thanks, love you, bye.
Till last, won't you tell me, is that healthy, baby? But did you know that when it snows, my eyes become a large and the light that you shine can't be seen.